Now for our weekly wrap-up of global politics with the University of Auckland Associate Professor, Dr. Stephen Hoadley. This morning, Dr. Stephen, Brexit and Hong Kong in the news a lot lately. Are we any more clear about Brexit this week than we were last week?
Good morning, Brian. Well, no, in one respect we are not. On another respect, the new element is that the Prime Minister of Great Britain has threatened to suspend the Parliament for a long period of time to prevent a motion of no confidence against his government or a motion to extend the Brexit deadline until January. It's a real confrontation. It's a game of chicken in many respects, although it's deadly serious. It pits the Prime Minister against Parliament. Normally, the two work very closely together, unlike the American presidential system. The Prime Minister is an MP, comes out of Parliament, works with Parliament, usually commands the majority party. But in this case, Parliament is divided down the middle. Each party is divided down the middle. So we're going to have to wait and see if Parliament can actually pass a motion that would extend Brexit on, if and that happens, then Prime Minister Boris Johnson would call a new election. And that would, of course, raise all kinds of interesting questions. So I'm sorry, we don't have a definitive answer. We still don't know. It's going to happen in exactly 8 weeks tomorrow, unless some Parliament intervenes. So we better watch that every week when we talk.
Mm. And, of course, moving on to Hong Kong, has there been any significant breakthroughs in the situation in Hong Kong currently?
No breakthrough, Brian. It looks like a long-running saga. The chief administrator has said she will not resign. She has the backing of Beijing. The protesters are not going to stand down. They continue to disrupt traffic and business, and it looks like it's just going to carry on. So we're going to have to watch it. I guess the message for your listeners is, if you're going to Hong Kong, you know, pack your lunch and a bottle of water because there might be some delays.
Speaking of public protest, Dr. Stephen, the situation in West Papua, what's the current update and how does this relate to Pacifica?
The situation there is deteriorating. There are large demonstrations. The demonstrators now have burnt the Parliament building in Jayapura, the Papuan People's Assembly complex. The authorities have cracked down. Reportedly, 7 people have been killed, one of them a military person. The protesters continue to hoist the Morning Star flag to the top of flagpoles whenever they can find an opportunity. And the authorities apparently are giving free rein to what we call militia. Militia are like vigilante groups, like young men who are given license to go and beat up the Papuans. They did this in Surabaya. A group called Masyarakat Nusantara did this, and one of the students is in pretty critical condition. And so the situation is getting worse. The authorities have banned all communication, just like in the Indians in Kashmir. So we're finding it very difficult to find out exactly what's happening there because the internet is down and other kinds of communications are down. And what this begins to remind us of a little bit of what happened exactly 20 years ago in East Timor. The East Timorese voted for independence. The Indonesian occupying forces unleashed their militia. Their militia went around, beat up people, burnt houses. And it wasn't until Australia, New Zealand, and other countries intervened a few months later that order was restored. So it looks like this is a tactic the Indonesian authorities are using in West Papua to intimidate the independence movement there. Now, how does that relate to Pacifica? Well, it's because they are Pacifica people. These are Melanesian people. They're not Javanese. There is an ethnic divide between the island of Java and the island of Papua New Guinea. And consequently, the Vanuatu government and NGOs in Vanuatu have been very staunch in supporting the West Papua movement. And the Pacific Islands Forum in Tuvalu has passed a resolution asking the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights to do an investigation and report back to next year's Pacific Island Forum. So we'll be talking about this issue from time to time, Brian, and keeping an eye on it. And, we wish for a peaceful resolution.
Mm. And turning to other Pacific topics now, Dr. Stephen, it looks like the United States has taken a renewed interest in the Northern Pacific. Why is that?
Well, there's a new study has just come out from the RAND Corporation, which is a very prominent government-sponsored research organization. So it has a semi-official influence. And they have called the Northern Pacific Islands, the Federated States of Micronesia, Marshall Islands, Palau, as a power projection superhighway. Well, that's pretty powerful language, a power projection superhighway which connects Pearl Harbor, which is a major military strong point, to Guam, which is on the western Pacific, another U.S. strong point. So the islands in between are way stations. They have a strategic denial of outside powers, that is, Russia or China cannot establish any military bases there. And the study says that the United States government should open a new chapter in relationships with the so-called freely associated states, something like New Zealand and Cook Islands in their political relationship. They should maintain funding to the three island states when the current funding agreement expires in a couple of years. So it looks like the United States is taking an interest. Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, visited Pompeii last month and said that the United States government would open negotiations with the three island governments about renewed funding and other sources of revenue.
So does the new U.S. policy then in the Pacific apply to America's other rival, Russia, as well?
Yes, in both cases, the possible Chinese influence in the Pacific Island is a major concern. And now the U.S. Department of Homeland Security has changed the rules for Russians to enter Guam and the Confederation of Northern Mariana Islands. Russians previously could come without fairly visa-free regulations, but now they have to apply for a visa. Some 2,000 Russians visited last year. Now they're going to be much more restricted and probably watched a little more carefully because of the alleged Russian meddling in American politics via cyber attacks and by espionage and various other activities. So the U.S. is becoming more vigilant, and the Pacific Islands are becoming players, or at least associates in this rivalry between the United States on the one side and China and Russia on the other.
And finally this morning, a Solomon Islands fisheries official not happy with a decision made on the other side of the world last week. What's that all about?
Well, in Geneva, there's an organization called the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species. And this organization is concerned about bêche de mer, or sea cucumber. So they have decreed that the Solomon Islands sea cucumber, the high-quality ones, are endangered species, and therefore anybody who harvests them must get some sort of approval. They must do a monitoring and evaluation exercise before they can trade these items. Now, the official, Rosalie Masu, who is the director of inshore fisheries for Solomon Islands, says, look, this is the second biggest fishery industry in the country after tuna, and it affects the small holders most. It's the rural and remote communities that harvest bêche de mer or sea cucumber. So this international ruling way over in Geneva is going to impact negatively on the incomes of the small fishermen, the local people who are harvesting this particular product. They don't have the resources to write long reports and do monitoring and exercises and reporting. So this is a real struggle between the small entrepreneur or fisherman on the one side and this international organization on the other, with the Solomon Islands government in between trying to moderate it.